Last week, the United States Supreme Court struck down limits on the total amount of money that donors can give to various political committees in one election cycle. That prompted Michigan Campaign Finance Network Director Rich Robinson to say in a statement that the decision in the McCutcheon versus Federal Election Commission case is one more step in the direction of monetizing American democracy. Rich Robinson, thank you very much for being with us.
Good to be with you, Gordon.
What did you mean by that statement, that it's another step in the direction of monetizing democracy?
Since the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act of 2003, the McCain-Feingold reforms, we've had a series of decisions from the United States Supreme Court liberating money, undoing an act of Congress, making donors who are able to give large amounts more equal than other Americans. And I think it puts squarely in the prospective office holder's eye the need for money and a new way to get money in a more efficient way from fewer people in greater denominations.
Now, not many people max out on what they can give. So in a practical sense, how much will the voters really notice a change after this decision?
Well, it's not certain. To your point, I believe it was just 591 Americans gave the maximum amount allowed by law to candidates for federal office in the 2012 election cycle. So that's one out of every 500,000 Americans. But we don't know prospectively, potentially, this is a green light to those who would be inclined that there's an acceptance of this, that you're not somehow an outlier. The Supreme Court of the United States is inviting you now to spend what you can in federal campaigns and elections. So it's hard to say how this is going to play out. You're absolutely right, though. It's very few Americans give the maximum amount, whether in federal elections or in Michigan state campaigns and elections.
We do have some wealthy families in Michigan that are very politically involved. The DeVos family in the Grand Rapids area comes to mind. What is the potential for them to give more? What could they do with this decision having been made that they couldn't do before?
Each member of a family, each individual, was confined to giving $123,000 to all federal candidates, party committees, and political action committees prior to the McCutcheon decision. Now, through a vehicle of a joint fundraising committee, they could give an extreme amount of money directly to one office holder who could act as an aggregator. So, for example, if you took Rich and Helen DeVos, their four adult children and spouses, collectively, if they decided to give a joint fundraising check, let's say to Representative Justin Amash, their representative in Congress, they could give him a single bundle of nine checks for just less than $40 million. And over the course of a two-year election cycle, a bit over $57 million. Now, of course, that is not money for Representative Amash personally. It would allow him, for example, to go to the Republican caucus room and give out just less than $92,000 to every Republican member of the House of Representatives. 5,200 of that would be from each member of the DeVos family in this hypothetical example would be for the candidate committee, and 5,000 from each, or 45,000 altogether, would be for the leadership pack of the individuals. And this leadership pack angle is an important one. The Federal Election Commission does not prohibit converting the funds in leadership PACs to personal uses. I understand that the Senate and Ethics rules prohibit conversion to personal uses, although I've never heard of an enforcement action along that line. But those ethics rules are only for current members of Congress. And so once an individual leaves Congress and takes his leadership PAC with him, essentially he's free to convert that to personal uses. Now, one might say, you know, you could imagine Representative Amash going to the Republican conference room and saying, well, here's $90,000 from each of you, and maybe next year there'll be another $45,000 for each of you, but the donors don't want anything. But you know what they like, and you know what they don't like. Now, the question is that corruption? It's not quid pro quo corruption, that's for sure. And that's what Justice Roberts, Chief Justice Roberts, said in the McCutcheon decision was what could be regulated, only quid pro quo corruption. That's an interesting idea because it runs contrary to what the members of Congress testified when they were passing the McCain-Feingold reforms and when that case was argued before the Supreme Court. Then legislators like Warren Rudman of New Hampshire and Alan Simpson of Wyoming and Chris Shays of Connecticut said, when you're involved in this system, these super donors have access to you in ways that others don't. At that time, office holders were raising massive checks for party soft money accounts that could be used in theory only for get out the vote and voter registration, but they were actually used for issue ads, quote unquote, as well. Now you'd have an office holder raising plausibly multi-million dollars from an individual donor, but again, not for him. But the fact remains that in the view of those who were experienced in politics, it was corrupting. And I think this is what we're seeing here is the nature of the changed experience base of the United States Supreme Court. Since Justice Sandra Day O'Connor retired, none of these individuals had run for public office. None of them have firsthand experience in politics, other than administration officials at different points. And so they don't have what Justice O'Connor had, which was a personal experience in the nature of money in politics.
Justice Clarence Thomas wrote a concurring opinion basically saying that there should not be contribution limits. Why should we have limits on what people can contribute to campaigns?
Well, it is a prophylactic against an individual donor having excessive or corrupting influence on the conduct or votes of an office holder. Now, again, going back to Chief Justice Roberts' position on that, that may be questionable, or at least it was a bigger bite of the apple than he wanted to take on the McCutcheon case. But in a way, I think what Justice Thomas is doing is inviting us to look around the corner and see what's coming next in the way of Supreme Court campaign finance jurisprudence, because while he was a little too radical right now for the decision of the court, as he was in Citizens United on the disclosure question, I think he's looking down the track and can see what's coming.
In your statement after the McCutcheon decision, you also said, in view of the fact that this ruling effectively removes all limits on money's privileges in politics, it is more important than ever that transparency and accountability must be reestablished in the political economy. Specifically in Michigan, what would that mean?
Well, for example, right now, since the middle of January, really without break, Americans for Prosperity has been running advertisements that are personal narratives about individuals who are unhappy about the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. And they criticize Gary Peters as being part of the lie of the year. I think most people recognize that those are campaign ads. But strictly speaking, they're issue ads because they don't tell you to vote for, vote against a candidate. Now, these ads at this time of the year won't even be reported to the Federal Election Commission. They only know about quote-unquote issue ads within the last 60 days before an election or within 30 days before a primary. And so not only do we not know who gave the money to Americans for Prosperity to buy these ads, we don't really know how much they're spending, or at least very precisely. I've seen some people reporting how much Americans for Prosperity told them they're spending. And I'm doing my best to collect from the broadcaster's public files an accounting of how much that is. But that's one example of advertising that's not being disclosed at all. Now, on the other side of the campaign, the Senate Majority PAC, which is an instrument of the U.S. Senate Democrats, has been running ads about Terry Land and Obamacare and the auto bailout and so forth. And I suppose, technically speaking, they are equally issue ads, although I think they're pretty clearly campaign ads, too. The difference being Senate Majority PAC is a super PAC, and so it has to file regular reports with the Federal Election Commission about all the contributions to it and all the spending. So that's at the federal contest level. Our gubernatorial campaign right now is being run as a proxy war between the Democratic Governors Association and the Republican Governors Association. Yes, Governor Snyder ran an ad on during the Super Bowl and had a cable buy that ran for about a month after that. But since that time, it's really been a matter between the Democratic Governors Association and the Republican Governors Association, neither of which are required to report the ads they're buying to the Michigan Department of State. Now, both of those committees are what we call 527 committees, and they're required to file a schedule of receipts and expenditures with the Internal Revenue Service. So the information about who's putting money into those committees can be learned, but it's obscured because it's part of a large pot of money. It's not a committee that's reporting in the state of Michigan. And when it spends money, it's part of a massive spending disclosure of what one of those committees is buying across the country. So the Democratic Governors Association may report that they spent $30 million this quarter on television, but how much of it was in Michigan? How much of it was in North Carolina? How much of it was in any one state across the country? And you really can't separate that out. So there's a great deal about critical spending of money in politics that we just don't know. And the more competitive the elections are, the greater percentage of the money is coming from quote-unquote independent groups making independent expenditures, often without disclosing their donors or how much and how they're spending their money.
So we will be voting in a primary in Michigan in less than 4 months and a general election in less than 7 months. How much will we know or how much can we know about who has been contributing in the various races by the time we go and cast our ballots?
I suspect that, for the most part, we'll know what the candidate committees are doing. Both Terry Land and Gary Peters will file regular campaign disclosure reports of what their candidate committees are doing, and that will be revealing to some degree. That'll probably account for, I don't know, $3 to $4 million at this point in the election cycle that they have raised in their candidate committees. We won't know anything about either the sources or the amount spent by Americans for Prosperity. We'll know something about what Senate Majority PAC spends. So, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if when Americans for Prosperity reaches that disclosure window 30 days before the primary election, they'll probably stop their activity rather than report it to the Federal Election Commission. That's what they did in Michigan surrounding the presidential campaign in 2012. They ran ads up until 30 days before the primary, stopped, resumed immediately after the Michigan presidential primary, and ran ads for months afterward, none of which had to be reported to the Federal Election Commission. So, and the important thing, I think, for listeners to take from that is the Federal Election Commission has records that say nonprofit corporations spent $320 million in the 2012 federal election cycle. Well, that's what was reported to them. But, for example, in the state of Michigan, where nonprofits spent $12 million on presidential candidate television ads, only $4 million had to be reported to the FEC, and none of the donors had to be reported for any of that $12 million. So what we're seeing in the official record of campaign spending is but the tip of the iceberg.
Rich Robinson, as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Gordon.
Rich Robinson is the director of the Michigan Campaign Finance Network.